Blog Talk Radio. Hello, all, and welcome to one of the places of the converging flow. You have zoomed in, tuned in, flowed in, walked in, connected into awakenings, and I want to welcome you all. I'm your host and co-pilot, Michelle Mache. That bit of music that we were playing was Pure Energy by Beth Green, who is also going to be on the show today. Really looking forward to connecting with her. Found out about her through Cosmic Dimensions, which is also streaming us live. So we're reaching many more aware, awake light beings, and there's even more connectedness. Had some wonderful feedback from the show on our segment on Wednesday, and I want to get into a little bit of the feedback in the emails that I received from some of you. Which I'm always, some people say, oh, how do you take the time to answer and call back? Because I just love to. That this is such a joy for me. So it's not an intrusion at all. I really do welcome your insight, your feedback, hearing about your journey on the path and how it's unfolding for you, how Awakenings has helped or assisted you, what else you would like to hear on Awakenings and soon to see on Awakenings. So that all of that is welcomed. Those of you that are just tuning in, I want to let you know that Awakenings airs every Wednesday and Friday, sometimes with a bonus program put in, at 12 p.m. Pacific time, 12 to about 1:30. And you want to call in, or if you'd prefer to listen, I have some people that have told me they listen while driving because they're on their cell phone. But if you want to call in with questions or just listen, you can dial 347-539-5122. And our guest also, our awakened guest, will be doing readings later. So you will want to hold on to that number, and I'll also put it in the chat. Or anybody else, I see some friends along the path in the chat. So you can also put the number back in when we get to that point. And if you have questions and you're in the chat, just type it in capitals, bold text. I won't take that as a shout. I'll take that as a shout out. Look at me. I have a question here. So anyway, I will be doing, for my guidance, more of the channeled sessions, hopefully, monthly. We'll see, monthly or bi-monthly. And sometimes I need a little assistance on that because I am in an altered state. I'm a conscious channel, so I am able to, it's almost like having different realities coming through one vessel or vehicle, and I just keep moving out of the way, so to speak. My local mind, or the Michelle consciousness, I don't know how to say it. It's in a way, if you think of a tube or a funnel, and you're inside this tube or this funnel, and you kind of press against the wall, which is really no wall, it's just a funnel of light, and to let the other energies or awarenesses, or if it's healing light or healing energy, come through, or information or other energies or beings, or just God, the all that is, spirit coming through. So I was blessed that I'm able to do at all. When I started doing this, there really was no, with my non-physical teachers as well as my physical teachers, I just followed what was required of me. And it was only until years later people were saying, oh, that's your psychic medium. Oh, you're a channeler. Or, oh, that's remote viewing. I'm like, oh, I don't know that. Because to me, when you're in that space of oneness, there really is very little space and time. So there's very little distance to no distance. So that's why a lot of times when I'm doing a reading, I can see the person or see where they're at or what they're wearing. Or I've even done cases where one funny story years ago with a wonderful client of mine, I hope he listens at some point, but he suspected his spouse cheating, and she was. I was able to remote view from L.A. to the Midwest somewhere, I won't say where, and see her getting out of the gym, getting in her car, driving in her car. I could see the billboards that she was driving by. I could see the condo on the lake where it was a brick. I'll never forget. It's coming back to me now where she had rented an apartment with this person who she later married, so it was all perfect. But it's really the case of getting out of the local mind or the little mind and moving into that space of oneness and being of service to whatever is needed for, if you want to call it, for the highest good, which I'm not a judge of that in that state. In fact, I have, dear friends of mine and family members that will say, oh, Michelle, when you're in that state, there's no judgment. You're so clear, but when you don't like this in your regular life, and it's true, certain things that when I'm in that space of channeling, I have very little to no judgment. I mean, it's still coming through the Michelle filter, but that doesn't mean that certain things that I would see or perhaps relay information on that I have any awareness in the Michelle world or would even like it or even know it or even agree with it. Sometimes I channel things that I'm just not in agreement with, or a person's direction or what they're supposed to do. It's on such an expanded level that it's beyond, if I go into the Michelle realm, it's beyond my values, principles, and beliefs. So I don't always channel things that I agree with. Or I can see something coming up in someone's path that they perhaps need to do or going to do, not even need to do. Which brings us into one of the questions. I got a few questions and emails. One of them was on the idea of co-creating or manifesting, or as I had said on Wednesday, because I had to re-listen twice, by the way, to the segment because I didn't remember. That's unfortunate. A lot of times I won't remember information in that state. A lot of times, clients will say, oh, you said this and this is going to happen. Do you remember? And this and that. And I'm like, no. So perhaps that's the divine blessing, and which also brings us into the forgetfulness I talked about that we get when we're on this dimension or this density, only because the little mind, the local mind, cannot yet handle all of the information or input or multidimensional realities that we are actually all living, past, present, future, multidimensional. This is what a part of schizophrenia is, according to my shamanic training, is their ego personality is not strong enough. There's not enough of the proper filtering, and they have what's called bleed through, where they're having these cosmic experiences and they're thinking they are those experiences. Instead of having the Christ consciousness or Christ awareness, now they're Christ on the cross, so to speak. So there's a great book, Stan Grof, Spiritual Emergency. There are some people that I've had some experience with it in my shamanic initiation work. However, that's not my expertise, and there are people that can handle that. It's a very different mindset. And this is why in esoteric wisdom and arcane knowledge, it is said you have to ready the mind and work on the emotional body, that the emotional body is a carrier wave. Because we live in a world that's not just projection. See, we're all being, and I want to say collectively, bumped up to the next level beyond thoughts. Yes, thoughts are prayers. Yes, thoughts somewhat determine what we're experiencing, but we're going to go beyond thought because it's not by thought alone that we create or co-create. the thought is very low on the chain. It's by vibrational frequency. It's by tone, tonality. It's by your signature frequency. It's by feeling, the feeling tone. That's why when we say when you're in chronic stuck states, that lowers your vibrational frequency and therefore gives you a certain narrow experience. So if you have negative thoughts, honestly, I'm going to be real honest with all of you. It's not a big deal. It's just you don't want to live there. If it's chronic, then that means your emotional tone or level, the vibrational frequency that's coming out may be more narrow or more on a third dimensional experience or calling in that. So it's more about your vibrational frequency, but we have to start with something. It used to be behavior, you know, that we can, and you can. There still are some people that are what we call behavioralists. They work on behavior. You know, so if you change your behavior, then you'll change your thoughts. Well, that's true. And if you change your thoughts, then you change your behavior. And that's true. However, ultimately, you need to get to the feeling, the sensory of something. The feeling tone is what actually gives you the shift of what I want to say longer standing, that lasts longer. And that's why the emotional clearing is so important. To get that energy in motion, fluid. Because as long as you're fluid, you know, and Tai Chi masters, Reiki masters know this, any martial artists, certain chiropractors or acupuncturists, they work on this premise that as long as the energy is flowing, as long as those meridians are flowing, as long as those ley lines are flowing, as long as those chakra wheels are spinning, and there's less and less blockages to no blockage, then you have vitality, the vita, you have life, you have more the pranic life energy, the God energy. That's all God is pranic life force energy. It's the matrix that we are. It's the energetic matrix of light. So as long as you're fluid, that's what we want to move into, is we want to move into the fluidity, and that means non-judgment. Also, if we're overly judging ourselves, you know, I don't mean a little judgment here and there. I'm talking about, you know what I mean, when it goes days and weeks, not even years, when it goes months and years, and you see yourself in the same groove, the same pattern, then you got to go, ooh, there's a chronic state here. Or you see the same pattern playing out, especially with relationships, because 2009 is really a focus on relationships. Right relationship with yourself, with others, and right livelihood, and right use of will. A lot of people are going to be learning how to use the little will or local will, or the little mind, the ego personality, aligning it to divine will, to receive the soul's impression, and to receive that spiritual guidance through being spirit-led. Which brings me to the question that someone had asked. Okay, so I hope I answered the first one about that we're co-creators anyway, so it's not just by thought. You really want to tap into the energy of the situation or the energy in motion. So if you're having a stuck pattern, I can tell you it's not coming from your soul or your higher self. It's the ego personality. Is stuck on something, stuck in a groove, because the soul is very changeable. Now, I will say we come in with a signature pattern, but I want to say that's an energetic pattern. So in that, when I was talking Wednesday, I talked about you'll know your energetic pattern or your soul's pattern by the theme in your life and where the true openings are and where you're being led, and also by what you get joy from. So it still goes back to feeling. Like, for instance, when I woke up this morning and I had just a little excitement, a little tickle. I loved doing the channeling. I love channeling. I love assisting others. I love connecting and revealing this gift. But I also love highlighting people. So I was tickled today. I thought, oh, my God, Beth Green, what is she about? I've been reading her stuff. I listened to her amazing music. And I'm so excited to highlight her or share her with all the awakening and awakened listeners and participants. So I follow my natural joy, and that's what I'm suggesting to all of you. Now, sometimes you have to do things that we're not really crazy about, you know. I have to do billing. I don't really like doing that. You know, yeah, I do like the abundance coming in a form of money, but I don't really, I'm not a paperwork person. I mean, I don't also like, quote unquote, working just for money. I think that's boring. I like barter. I like trade. I like exchange of energy. I love collaboration. So I find out what do I like to do on a personality ego level, because the true personality ego level is your soul's emanation. It's your soul's imprint in physical form. It's your consciousness made manifest. So someone asked last time, and I got actually an email about this, isn't this all an illusion? Well, the form is, yes, we're not solid beings. Everything is moving. Everything is moving. Some things are moving more quickly, like my voice. The words that I'm saying are moving more quickly than the body. So the body is a slower, denser, subtle energy. So yes, the shape and the form changes. But be very careful, be aware not to get into that dynamic of this is not real. I'm not having this experience. Yes, you are having this experience on a third dimensional, fourth, fifth dimensional reality, or even beyond third, fourth, fifth dimension. You can be in the seventh, eighth, the 12th dimension and beyond and still being in this sensory perception. So that fall into matter is to know what matters to you. And that fall into matter is your individuated consciousness of the I am, the all that is you. Each and every one of you manifesting as you, as Tammy, as Spiritual Pilot, as Raydeen, as a Beth. It's a Beth comes into this lifetime, and she's manifesting and expressing as God as a Beth. I'm God as a Michelle. And what does Michelle like to do? What does Beth like to do? What does Kat like to do? Or Sylvia? Or Rick? Oh, Drita, what do you, Little Light, what do you, that's what you're meant to do. Now, the other question that I got asked was why the law of resonance? Why not put the emphasis on the law of magnetic attraction? Well, I want you to really ask yourself, when you put your energy in the law of magnetic attraction, have you really attracted what's for your highest good and what you really want? And I will say no. I haven't seen it. The law of magnetic attraction is going to happen anyway as a byproduct because we're magnetic and electrical beings. So when I am focusing my will, my intent on something, I'm becoming electrical. When I determined by that being aligned to my soul's purpose, I will naturally magnetize to me anyway what it is that I need and want. So if you really want to connect into your soul's purpose, I suggest you tap in first to the law of resonance and look at what you're truly resonating to your highest good. And that takes some meditation. That takes some emotional clearing. That takes getting the mental mind, you know, limiting beliefs a little out of the way and not being locked into preconceived ideas. Because the law of resonance is going to show you that which is emerging through you as you, through people and situations that you're drawn to. So if I'm resonating in a certain area, in other words, I see that I'm being led, because when you follow the law of resonance, you begin to live spirit-led, which means you begin to open to the higher perspective. You let spirit guide you. And who are we talking about? Spirit is only guiding the little you, the personality, ego you. So in essence, you let your spiritual nature, your higher self, however you want to term it, guide you in the way that fits in with the soul's plan, which their energetic matrix or original matrix of you, of the you that is also the total you of the all that is. So if I'm looking at what's resonating with me, what makes me feel healthy, what makes me feel life enhanced, not out of codependency or neediness, but on a true level, feels like, God, this feels, wow, this is great. I feel good. I feel of service. I feel happy. I like it. This gives me true joy. That's what you follow. When you follow the law of resonance, then you allow others, you follow the law of allowance, you allow others to have their own path. You help them where you can, but you don't overly get involved. But you keep following what resonates to you, then you begin to see where you're truly being led. for the highest good. And then you can bring in your co-creation or your conscious creation, and then you automatically magnetize law of magnetic attraction, which is of your highest good or most life-enhancing. It happens. It's a natural byproduct. Okay, if I'm eating 20 million Twinkies a day, we can guess what's going to happen, what I'm going to magnetize. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. So there's been a shift only because it seems to be more controllable to work with thought or thought forms. But to get to the true essence of what you're meant to experience, express, and manifest, you really want to connect in more on a vibrational level or more on an energetic level. And remember, not everything's projection. Not everything's about us. So you need to be able to discern, is something a projection or am I receiving a perception? Am I intuiting something? And there's a wonderful tool on this on my website that you can get, projection perception, and you can just download it. It's gratis, and then print it out. And that lets you know that we're beyond thought. We're vibrational beings of energy, light. And what is energy, light? Sound, feeling, love. This is the language of the soul. We're feeling, we're sensing. The carrier wave is the emotions, the energy in motion. The energy in motion is the Ethernet through the animal or astral plane. We get that clarity as we clear the astral body or the emotional body. That energy in motion, that carrier wave, becomes crystal clear, becomes like the best Ethernet that we can have. Then we go wireless. Then we go wireless, and that's going beyond the mental realm or little ego realm. So on that note, I wanted to connect back in regards to our amazing guest, and I'm so glad I got the music this morning and it fit in so perfectly, because the whole meditation that I had this morning had to do with energy, that we are these energetic beings, energy and light, and that energy and light is love, this oneness, this energy in motion that is this carrier wave that comes in many forms, and we're just one of the forms, right? So today we're going to be talking with Beth Green. Now, she is the spiritual director of a spiritual community called The Stream. And this spiritual community is helping redefine what it means to be human. The Stream offers energetic clearing, emotional healing, intuitive counseling, and spiritual teaching of empowerment. Now, as a spiritual teacher, Beth offers this. She's also a musician. Quite accomplished pianist. You heard a little bit of her music, and we'll be hearing some more of her music. She also has a photo book of art called Sacred Union, The Healing of God, God's Little Aphorisms, and the Autobiography of Mary Magdalene. She also has a wonderful CD, A Soul's Journey, and The Gift of Peace. So with that, I really want to welcome Beth Green.
Hello, Michelle. Can you hear me?
I sure can, Beth. You can speak up a little bit more. Wonderful to connect with you.
Oh, it's so great to connect to you. I loved what you were saying. It's a miracle of technology that we overcame the technological problems of getting together today, because I have been out of a phone line for a week. But here we are on a cell phone, connected to another phone, connected to a microphone.
Exactly. And, you know, I had to laugh, Beth. I had such a tickle because your music so fit in. All of it, but I upload, in fact, we'll play a little bit later, the Path of Not Knowing.
Yes.
And then Pure Energy. I just started laughing. I played it over and over, and I thought, this is the thing, because we're moving out of these thoughts or that our thoughts are doing everything, and, you know, we're creating everything, moving into that path of not knowing. And who's not knowing but the ego personality? So I had to chuckle when I saw the title. I thought, oh, my God, yeah, this is it. You know, this is it.
I felt the same way when I heard you speaking, because I've been in the movement, the I don't know, the consciousness movement or whatever, since 1980. And during much of that time, I was kind of like marginalized because I did not believe that we created reality. And and I believed in the law of co-creation, which is intention and allowance, and that when we try to create reality, it's out of our ego agenda, and so on and so on and so on. And I'm listening to you. I tuned in. I'm listening to you. I said, my God, what planet did I just end up on?
Beth, I've been saying the same thing. I'm so damn tickled that finally people are talking about the soul. We're moving beyond the ego.
Yeah.
Because you're right. All these, so much of the material that's been out there has been about creating or co-creating even on from the ego personality level that, you know,
exactly.
I want this, or I'm meant to have this, or I'm meant to do this. And
right.
so much of it is, it's what I find with many people, it's so far beyond what their soul's purpose is or what they came here to actually do.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's why we say who. Who wants what? You know, who's the one that's wanting to create something, you know?
Exactly. When, for instance, when I asked the question so many years ago, who am I? And then I thought, well, is there even an I to who? And it was very confusing. So it's
there is no who. And that's, you know, my contention is, forget asking who am I? You're a spiritual being. Go now. What do you want to do? Stop this thinking of who am I? Who am I?
That's right.
You know?
That's right. God once said to me, this is one of the little aphorisms in the God's Little Aphorisms book, was God said that you are the, he said, look into the stream. And that time I talked about God instead of the source. So I called him God. He said, look at the stream. He said, you are the drop of water that's different from all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, which drop would that be? And then he said, and that is my point. And so then when I used to have guides in those days. You know, I had these inner guides that came to me in 1980 and took over my life. Up to that point, I wasn't even in the spiritual movement. I wasn't religious. I was a Marxist. I was a socialist. I was trying to make the revolution. And suddenly I started hearing voices. And I went, my God, I'm psychotic. And they told me not to study anything. Don't read anything. Don't study with anybody. Don't talk to anybody. Just listen to us and be a blank slate. And every once in a while, they would perform some sort of miraculous thing that would show me that I really was hearing something that was completely accurate. And I became a counselor overnight, and I became a spiritual teacher from a Marxist to a spiritual teacher in a day. Because I always have a tendency to overdo things. They're worth doing. They're worth overdoing. And I remember asking my guides then, are there really past lives? Because I used to be able to see, I still could, that I could see a past life like I was watching a movie. And they said to me, what do you care? Is it working? And I said, yeah, it's a great metaphor. I said, then use it. And then I said, well, is there a current life? And they said, what do you care?
That sounds like the little the trickster energy of spirit of making you focus in the present. You know.
Absolutely, they said you don't even know if there's a current life. So what are you worried about a past life? And then they told me that all karma is collective anyway. And just what you were saying, Michelle, is so lovely. You know, we are a simultaneous body, mind, spirit manifestation of the oneness, and we only exist in this moment. Because after this, when the body goes and the mind goes, well, you know, if you put a corkscrew into your brain, your personality is going to change.
Yes,
so don't think you're not your body.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is that we extended into this vibrational frequency to have this kind of interesting experience. And what I find funny is that people then try to reject it. Of course, you know that came from that puritanical old paradigm, Christian, Muslim, you know, the oldie moldy, self-flagellation and, you know, this is wrong and the flesh isn't right. The misreading of the Bible, that allegory. But it's
Exactly, and we're here to embrace it, no matter how much it sucks. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And then we say, Beth, it sucks only to that us, the ego personality, because we definitely have been programmed to certain things that we like, right, or dislike here. I mean, you know, and I'm there too. I mean, there's certain experiences that I like, and I'll say, oh, this is good, and then another one is bad. But that's such a limiting consciousness or awareness. That's only looking from that ego personality.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And simultaneously, because we are incarnate and we are in bodies, certain things hurt.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people, I love what you said about not everything is a projection. If someone is standing on your foot, they need to move.
Yeah.
This is my interpretation. Because they are crushing my foot. And that is a physical sense, and pain has a purpose. The source gave us the perception of pain in order to transmit information. Unfortunately, we get into these pain loops. We're experiencing what I call needless pain, which is the pain that we create, as opposed to the pain that was given to us to inform us as we go through this dance that we call life.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, Beth, that inform us. Because it's just another message, right? Isn't it just another?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. It's everything is information.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is information.
I think too. I just want to see what you think about this, and I'm so excited to be talking with you. Because as soon as I was reading your stuff, I'm like, oh my God, this is. See, I think some of us are now finally starting to come out of the woodwork. We're coming out of the crevices of the universe. And coming together, because a lot of this information, like what you're saying, I as well had been speaking, even to not study. I got to a certain point of study, and they said, no more books, no more anything, and you'll be given confirmations. And then later I'd have a confirmation from someone or someone telling me about a book, and I'd say, I don't want to read somebody else's stuff. I want more, you know, pure insight. But it seems to me, what do you think about this or feel on this? It seems to me that something happened, maybe it was earlier. I noticed it really, I guess, in the 80s. And some people that are older than me have said it actually happened in the 70s. But that there became this egocentric point of view of this, that everything's a projection. So it became this simplified, oh, if I meet an angry person, it's because I have anger inside me. You know, that now we become this egocentric, everything's about me in the universe. So, right, every experience I have is because of me, you know.
Yes, absurd, isn't it?
Yeah, and then perception went out the window. And, you know, and I always tell people, you know, I've done some readings for people that it is, maybe it's projection on such an expanded level that I've experienced it before, but truly in my lifetime of this level or dimension, things have come through, or I've witnessed things that are pure perception. It's not something that I've gone through. It's not something, a shadow. It's not something that I want to do. And could you speak of that a little bit?
Well, you're bringing up a topic that has so many roots and so many leaves. Let me just begin with what was immediately triggered for me by what you said.
Okay.
Which is, I was born in 1945, so I was brought up in the 50s. And in the 50s, it was all about conformism and the Red Peril. It was a time of, when I was 9 years old, several things happened simultaneously. McCarthy was on television, the Army McCarthy hearings, the witch hunts against people, the communists in the Army. Teachers were being arrested for speaking. I mean, this is the era that I grew up in. The Rosenbergs were executed. The words "under God" were put in the Pledge of Allegiance, and they hadn't been there before.
Oh, they weren't there before?
No, no way. In fact, my first political act was when I refused to pledge allegiance to the flag. When they added "not
you
under God,"
girl. I can't believe, I thought they were there all the time. So they were put in?
They were put in. I mean, that's why you need old people like me around to remember.
Hey, I value. Are you kidding? I want to get to the old timers or the oldest information I can because I know stuff is so diluted. You know.
Oh, it is. It's totally. I mean, there are so many things that I experienced that you would only read about that I was actually there. And got to see. And, of course, if there are people who came before me, it's the same thing. But
right.
There was a real movement. Women were supposed to go back into the house, you know, after the war. Women were kind of more emancipated during World War II, and women were supposed to go back to the house. So there's a whole social gestalt of focus on making money, developing the economy. Women go in, create this fantasy of the nuclear family, which never really existed for the working class before anyway, but it was all created, and it was held together by this kind of moral conformism. And then in the early, I am not kidding you that they tried to expel me from grammar school for refusing to salute the flag. It was very repressive. I was reported to the FBI when I was 12 I'm serious, because I was reading these books about the Spanish Civil War, which to me was like yesterday, about the socialists and the fascists. This was very real to me. The union movement was very vibrant. The repression, the removal of the communists from the union movement was just happening. See, all of this stuff, and then you come into this kind of bland landscape that so many other people think was America, don't even connect to the tremendous struggles that we had in the nation until, of course, the civil rights movement started to move again in the 50s, disrupting the illusion of everything is wonderful in the good old days under the patriarchy, the white patriarchy. You have those ripples, which, of course, began to strengthen and strengthen until we got into the 60s. And there was so much of a cultural revolution against that. And if you look at what oneness meant during these different times, oneness meant conformism in the 50s, you know, conformity to the Ozzie and Harriet sort of concept. And then the kids who were rebelling, I couldn't quite go with it because I was much more of a serious revolutionary and everybody was smoking dope. And that was driving me crazy. But I could see what it was, you know, was a breaking out of the constraints of thinking and moving into this kind of psychedelic oneness where nobody thought about money. Nobody was really into the ego on that level, but into the ego on another level, which was I need my self-expression. I need to express myself. And it was a very important transition from the stultifying, repressive kind of we have only one culture and it's called, you know, Fred Astaire. And not to say there's anything wrong with Fred Astaire, but, you know, that it was not inclusive really of the richness of what was there. And people got into the me at the same time. Something very interesting was happening simultaneously, which was the sense of we was growing very strong because of the movement. Not only the hippies, but the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement, people were joining together, realizing that they had power in oneness and simultaneously fighting against the cultural stultification. So the old movement, am I talking about the right thing?
Yeah, no, I love what you're saying. Yeah, and everyone else does too. It's great.
Okay, great. So the old movement, political movement that we were in, reflected both the understanding of oneness and it was a very immature kind of ego. When the movement sort of died, even though some of us tried to continue, you know, into the 70s, I was still, you know, a full-time organizer in the 70s working with the women's movement. The wealth, the money, the capacity to buy your own home and move out of the projects, the ability to buy your own washer and dryer, which, by the way, I got my first washing machine when I was 40 years old, and I've never turned back. It was like nirvana.
Now, let me ask you something, Beth. What I'm hearing from you, and again, I look at threads, it seems that that idea of true oneness or universe is being, we're up-leveling it or up-shifting it or...
Again, from a different place. And let me just finish this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me just finish this point about the 70s and 80s, because I think this will help.
Okay.
When we had these two simultaneous movements going on, it was then we got dominated by the material explosion. When we had the material explosion, everybody who had been, I shouldn't say everybody, I mean, I have a tendency to hyperbolize, so, but it was a tendency. I mean, there's a trend. The trend of the people who had been in the movement was to go into business or to get jobs or to start families. And then all of a sudden, what happened is the I that had been into the revolt against the status quo, the I became a going towards the me, the money, the me, the house, the car, the me universe began taking over. And see, what you're referring to, I was trying to put it into a social,
So the me, so that came out of that over-focus on materialism.
Yes.
Became that's when the me focus came in, is what you're saying.
Exactly, and that's when the we began to dissipate, because people became more satisfied, and because they had their own personal freedom, they really didn't give a damn anymore what was going on with anybody else. And, you know, for those of us who were, you know, radicals, we were watching. There was no movement anymore. There was no energy for change. Now, some of that you could see even in the New Age movement. The New Age movement was very materialistic. The New Age movement is totally me-oriented. And it's about me and my prosperity and my this and my that. I asked my guides, again, I used to have guides. They stopped talking to me in 84. They said I was out there on my own. But, you know, I would ask them while they were still around about all of this. And they said there is no such thing as personal salvation, because we are all part of the collective consciousness, which is in the process of evolution. And I began to understand in the 80s and 90s that we are all part of a collective consciousness. But as long as we had the material means to live an independent-looking existence, we did it. And at the expense of our souls, because the women, for instance, who were stuck out in the suburbs with the 2.3 children and the washing machine, had no support system anymore, were not, you know, in the office. They couldn't wait to get out and go back to work because they were alone. And so with all the material capacity to have our own and to realize our own dream, we lost the connection to one another, which is the current economic crisis is actually breaking all of that and creating new possibilities. And so you see that the New Age movement, because our thoughts are very much connected to what our experience is. And then suddenly people are beginning to think differently because we have to. So that's a very short version of trying to respond to your question.
Wow. So, but it makes sense. It makes sense that. So we're clarifying that and moving beyond that, or I want to say not necessarily moving beyond, but perhaps moving beyond the limiting view of that me consciousness into a true we of tolerance and acceptance, and I want to say service. You know,
absolutely. And the only thing that could have done it is a social and economic cataclysm of this size.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what's happening. And what's beautiful about this is that in the old movement, and I'm calling the old movement the 60s and some part of the 70s, it was still that rebellion, the drugs, the me, my self-expression. And it was ugly in many ways. It was very ego-based. That period was very, very ego-based in the oneness. Now what's happening is where there is, I feel, and maybe I'm crazy, Michelle, but I have needless optimism. I always have. It's what's kept me alive all these years. Is that what I see is that a more pure understanding is possible, that we've done more inner work since the 60s, the focus on the me has also had some real value. People looking within psychology, therapy, understanding these things, bringing that together with the times, which are demanding a kind of explosion of social consciousness and enabling it, I see a much healthier, more spiritually based movement emerging today than what we ever saw before, and that we had to go through all of that craziness in order to come to this, because we had to discover that indulging every ego need leaves us empty and lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And as a,
I would tend to agree with that, and especially what you're saying with the economy, which if you think of economizing comes again from the derivative of energy, we have to look at our resources and ourselves differently. I think people are going to be much more creative, much more self-expressive. I think there's going to be a lot more consulting, small businesses. I think we're going to be in for a boom. That's my yes.
I love what you're saying. In fact, and I don't necessarily need to talk about this right now, but that was precisely the feeling that I had when the stream came up with this idea of doing this conference called Turning Crisis into Opportunity, a how-to conference, is that taking our new capacity for introspection, and I say new, I mean for the collective it's new, and really self-examining around six topics that we're presenting in order to really help ourselves break out of the box in our thinking and seize the opportunity to create a sustainable life, not just on an economic level, because we had a totally unsustainable economy, unsustainable ecologically as well as economically, but it was emotionally unsustainable as well. And that's the moment that we're being challenged to grasp. And only those of us who are really, and there are many people out there who are doing it in their own way, mm-hmm. but we are some of the people who are conceptualizing it. That is really the energy behind this conference, which is free. We're inviting people to come and really self-examine in these ways and start having the mutual support that's necessary for us to kind of, it's like a cauldron of creativity, to not recreate what we had in the past as though there were some good old days to go back to.
Yeah, well, I know, and a lot of people are trying to do, no, and that's why I say you got to get in that divine mind or that co-creative mind to create a new system. Now, I'm putting in the chat this your URL, your website address, I've been putting in there. But tell us a little bit more of the conference and when it's going to be, so I can also, the list people that are listening via other podcast stations can get it.
Fantastic. I'll tell you two things. The first thing is about where the conference is going to be, and then I'd like to talk about what else people can do if they're not in this area. The conference is going to be on Sunday, February 15th. So that gives us time to spread the word. And it's going to be here at our center in Bonneville, which is in North County, San Diego. And what we're going to be doing is, first I'm going to be speaking or whatever. Speaking means whatever the source tells me to say in the moment, right? And then we're going to break down into six groups, and people will have an opportunity to attend at least two of them. And each group is going to deal with one topic. The first one will be to confront our spending. Let me give you the overview. It's about how we spend money, how we make money, how we live, how we feel, how we think about who we are, and how we can help, which is, mm-hmm. goes back to your point. And confronting our spending is about, you know, we're going to ask ourselves questions such as, what do we think we need and why? Then we're going, mm-hmm. to reconsider the way we earn money. Are there new opportunities for us to earn money? And, you know, what economic opportunities are there? Are we letting fear get in the way of making necessary changes? Do we need to expand when we feel like contracting? Is it time to see different possibilities for ourselves? The third is how we live. And this is so crucial, Michelle, because we all want cheaper health care, but we don't want to be healthy. And the only way to really reduce the cost of health is to become healthy. So every one of us has to really examine what we individually are doing to reduce the cost of health care. For example, do we use drugs, alcohol, cigarettes? Do we eat unhealthy foods? I loved your Twinkie thing. I love it. I love you.
Well, I know some stuff I always tell people is not psychic, it's common sense, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, how are our gambling addictions squandering resources? How many accidents are preventable if we don't drive when we're drinking or when we're overtired? What is it that I do? How do I eat, drink, think, and live, and who pays the price? And so there we're going to have to be confronting our addictions. The fourth subgroup is going to be how do we feel? And this is going to be looking at stress and how we are driving ourselves. You know, one of the questions that I'm asking is, how did I feel when I had more money? Did I really feel any less stress? Or was I, and what do, you know, what is it all about? Do I now feel guilty or ashamed because of bad choices? Do I feel inadequate? What is it that I'm actually feeling, and what is the real stress of this economic downturn? Other than obviously if a person has no health care and can't pay for the dentist and they have a toothache, that's bad. But, you know, there's a lot of stress and pain that is needless. Then the fifth one is, how do I think about who I am? You know, that's about, many people have gotten their sense of identity from looking powerful on the outside. And that also includes New Age people. You know, I've gotten into position, money, prestige. How, you know, some of the questions we're going to ask ourselves is, how have I defined myself and my value? And how can I release myself from the external symbols and refocus on the deeper qualities within? Again, very in alignment with your show. And then the final piece, the final subtopic is, how can I help others, which is, how can I feel good about my contribution? And that brings us down to, how can I help now? And who can I help, whether it's just my next-door neighbor or, you know, in some other way. By, for instance, if I'm a mortgage broker and my business has gone to pot, can I go out and start organizing meetings and support groups for other mortgage brokers that are going crazy to help them? So it's a moment, of course, you know, the moment you turn yourself towards service, the more filled up you are with the universal beneficial energies, the more sourced you feel, and then you don't feel poor anymore. So we are hoping that this one, that there will be others after this conference. Now, if you don't live in this area, I'm thinking that this is one of the few things that we could actually export. For example, and this is all absolutely free, if you feel inspired to do an opportunities conference in your area, you could get in touch with us. We could send you the questions. We could do a training on the phone where we can help you get ready to, believe it or not, when we did the training for people to co-lead the groups, we found that they were avoiding the questions. So if you're avoiding the questions, you can't ask anyone else, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they may pull that in to have to look at it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. In fact, the people in the stream who volunteered to take each topic are the ones who knew they needed it the most. Mm-hmm. And so we can train people to do it, and we can either, I can do something, an introduction that we could either videotape, or maybe we could do some kind of webcamming or something. And people could do this anywhere as a part of the support of others. And I would love to see conferences where body workers come and do body work free to help people release the stress, because you know that when your body is stressed, your mind doesn't work.
Right. Well, you know, Beth, I've done, I have workshops and conferences moving from self-realization to self-actualization, which is just taking consciousness into the everyday living, doing something with this awakened state. And we've done some on awakenings here on Blog Talk. So you have an open invite, and everybody that's listening, we can hold a conference here also.
Oh, thank you. Just let me know how to do it. That would
be
fantastic.
We'll talk. Yeah, we'll talk after the program.
Lovely.
And,
lovely.
Cook something up, and then because you have chat here, people can call in.
Lovely.
And so we'll do it in the ether world here also. And one thing I wanted to jog back to that you were saying about the helping others and, you know, the monetary issues, my perception is also that a lot of this is going to be showing or demonstrating, if you want to say, some people might want to say learning, I prefer to say demonstrating, that we're more than just, you know, monetary beings. It's really, to me, is so limited our consciousness and what we think of ourselves to only rely, there's one form of abundance is the money. The money in the, you know, I mean, that is so limiting when there's so many forms. And I agree what you were saying. I think once you don't necessarily focus on, obviously have that intention. I love money. It's great to play with. You can, you know, have a certain amount in your mind or, you know, want to draw that amount in. But I have found by opening it up to saying, I want to be receive abundance in all ways, all forms. And if you're looking at how you are living abundantly, whether it's your connections, your insight, your knowledge, your awareness, you know, collaborating with someone, maybe even where you live or the type of weather you have. I mean, if you start looking and see the world as abundant, you naturally draw in whatever it is that you need, and it's not only coming in this one form, which is so limiting that it's this money. I mean, it's amazing how, and they're just printing it up anyway. It's somebody else's game that we all kind of bought into. They even tell you now. They tell you we need to print more money. I love it. They didn't used to tell you that so much. But now because people know, oh, yes, we're going back to the Federal Reserve. We've been okay to print this new amount in.
$350 billion more. Yes, it's very interesting. Actually, I've done a number of workshops on money, and there really is a real foundation to it, but we have so lost what that foundation is. But I could talk about money for an hour, and I don't think you want to do that. But I want to get to your, you know, your.
No, I'm aware of it as an energetic principle and what has been encoded in that as a form of money.
And that money is a way of commanding labor power, and that's really the fundamental essence of it. But what you're saying, there's something very profound about that. And there is scarcity and there is abundance. You know, there is ill health and there is well-being. I've been chronically ill for almost 49 years now. And, you know, I have had to live with that paradox of that I'm so abundant on so many levels and so ill at the same time that it's very bizarre. But it's one of the blessings that I had, which forced me to understand the law of co-creation a long time ago, that I couldn't go off into fantasy and spiritual bypass because I was so compelled to deal with reality. And I think that is, going back to what you were saying before, we're here in order to experience this plane of existence. So we have to experience that plane of existence. And at the same time, we shouldn't needlessly limit ourselves. And what you're saying is so profoundly true. I'd like to share something about what I see also so happening simultaneously on the planet, which has to do with the egos of the planes of existence. May I speak about that for a while?
Yes, please.
Okay. I think that, well, it goes back to a concept called the Healing of God. I wrote this book in called Sacred Union, The Healing of God. And back in the early 80s, I realized that our whole concept, and this goes also relates back to what you were talking about the body being bad, that we had this concept that God was perfect and we were vile. And we were vile because we were material. Mm. And that is an absurd idea. And I came into spirituality actually through the 12-step program. And I was looking at my character defects for the millionth time, and I will never forget this day. In 1983, I was in the bathtub making apologies for what a wretch I was again, and suddenly I thought, God, I was still thinking of it as God. I said, God, what am I doing here? You made me this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was supposed to be any different, I would be. This is ridiculous. And I remember getting out of the bathtub and saying to God, physician, heal thyself. If you don't like what you created, fix yourself and create something better. And I went off in a huff. So but that was the beginning of an understanding, of course, of a deeper understanding, that the concept that concept of the separation between the material and the spiritual planes goes back a very long time. And that each plane of existence, the mental plane, came into favor, let's say, during the Renaissance, when everything was about the mind. You know, before that, in the Middle Ages, everything was about the spirit. Then in our time, everything has been about the material world, the body. Each plane of existence is, of course, part of the oneness, but each plane has an ego, because ego doesn't only come with humans. Everything has ego. Every aspect of consciousness has ego. Every animal has ego. Ego is born when we are born, because it has its ego is just a way of acknowledging that individuation, and that I am responsible for this particular drop of water that's in the stream, that this is my, I'm totally responsible for myself. And without ego, we wouldn't know, I wouldn't know that it was time for me to brush my teeth, because somebody's got to tell me.
Right. Well, yeah, and that is us, like you said, it's individuated form, that egoic plane is part of the physical existence or manifestation. So you're right, you have to have that.
Have to have it. So the moment anything comes into existence, it has ego. So let's say we have a concept like beautiful. Well, beautiful only exists if ugly exists. So then ego. So then beautiful and ugly both have ego, which meaning that they, the moment they come into existence, even as an aspect of consciousness, that aspect of consciousness in itself has to perpetuate itself, and it begins to compete with all the other aspects of consciousness. And we will have these ridiculous conversations, and we humans are really good at this, you know, about whether virtuism is more important than faith, or whether, you know, it's like these egos are battling out what's more important, rather than seeing that we're all part of the oneness. And every dog that fights for a bone, which is every dog, has ego because it's fighting for its own existence. And the wolves really don't care what happened to the sheep, and the sheep don't care if the wolves are hungry, because we're all fighting for existence. That's the nature of the world that the source created, that they plopped us into, you know, that it is a battle for existence. Now, what you were talking about earlier, I believe, is about when we start to identify with the larger consciousness rather than just the narrow ego consciousness. Yes, I have to brush my teeth, but I also realize that if other people don't brush their teeth, their teeth are going to fall out, and they're all going to be dead, and I'm going to be alone. So I'm suddenly concerned about everybody else's toothbrush, because I realize my connection to the oneness. And we begin slowly but surely to move into, as we move into higher dimensions, we can actually start identifying with a higher dimension where we feel so much more connected to the oneness, and that's a completely energetic experience. But in our everyday life, to begin to integrate that awareness constantly in every moment of the oneness is, you know, is our challenge. And that's a challenge that we have to meet, we don't avoid the challenge by going and meditating in a cave for the rest of our lives, because then we're no longer in the world we're meant to deal with that challenge with. So when I began to understand in the healing of God, I really began to understand that we are the God that's healing itself, and that God isn't healing us. We are healing God, because God is the totality and we are just the part. And that's why the book is called The Healing of God.
I love it. God is the all that is.
Exactly.
It's all that is.
Exactly. So then as we begin to understand that, then even our stupidity becomes more forgivable, because we can look at it and say, well, for some reason, the universe has manifested itself in the form called Beth, with all her weaknesses and all her strengths, for some reason, for the purpose of the evolution of consciousness itself. And what I think about in terms of the ego is that instead of trying to kill off the ego, that the ego is part of the evolution of the oneness, because the ego is part of the oneness. And so as we see the oneness evolving, we also see the ego can evolve from being this adolescent or infantile, usually infantile, at best adolescent, me, I, necessary stage of development. In fact, when I was speaking earlier about the social transformation, if you look at it from a metaphysical perspective, you can say that we had to go through the I, because we started as the amorphous blob. We became fragmented into aspects of consciousness for the purpose of evolution. we got lost in the fragmentation, and that the coming together is what is the healing of God, a sacred union, the healing of God, where we are individuated and we are also part of the oneness. That is an evolutionary step. That is what the whole evolution of consciousness of the universe is about now. So if you look back on what I was saying about the earlier movement, you know, we had to go through phases, we had to go through this materialist I in order to realize just how empty it is. Are we still?
Yeah, I can hear you. Went out for a second.
Okay. And so that this coming together of all of us to understand now that we cannot thrive unless we are in a thriving whole. We used to believe before September 11th that the United States could just be happy and we could exploit everybody else in the world and it didn't matter how much other people suffered and that we were safe, but we found that that wasn't true, just as like when the ghettos burned. So while I'm not condoning terrorism, what I'm saying is understanding that we can't live in isolation and there is no joy or happiness for anyone as an individual unless we are all well. So this, the beginning of this understanding, what we are hearing the people out there in the world today as they're talking about the economy, they're talking about the global economy and that everybody needs to have jobs because otherwise if people don't have the money to buy the products, then everybody is going to go down. And that we have to come together, healing of God. That's huge about the integration of consciousness. Now, going back to what I was discussing before about the body, mind, and spirit. So we've seen at different times in history the body, the mind, and the spirit have attempted to dominate and say, I'm better. Mm-hmm. You see this in some of the spiritual people who also denigrate the physical plane and say it doesn't even exist. You know, it's all a figment.
I just went into that the other day. I'm so glad you mentioned this.
Yeah.
It's a figment of your imagination, right?
It is not a figment of your imagination.
Exactly. No, we created this. We co-created this expression, this experience.
That's right. We, the oneness, co-created this, not
exactly.
You and me.
No, and I know. That's what, yeah. The larger we.
Yes.
The
yes.
Body.
And so the healing of God or the evolution of consciousness, this new level of integration, I think it's exactly this moment that we can take this opportunity, and these moments don't happen often, where there's a crack in the collective consciousness where the old ways of doing things are so not working that we have a moment where we can begin to have an integration of the body, mind, and spirit. So that spiritual people who have gone off into la-la land are having to look at money and physical reality in a more honest way, and that people who have been caught up in the material world are having to dig deep into their spirituality, and that the mind, which is such an essential part of the evolution of our consciousness, needs to be used as a tool, as an instrument of divine consciousness to help us all move into this new level of integration that we are helping to support at this time.
Yes, I love that. I put that in the chat. Body, mind, and instrument of divine consciousness.
Yes. Body, mind, and spirit are all instruments
of
divine consciousness for the evolution of all consciousness, and that's what we're doing today. And let us seize the time.
Yes, I love that. And I'm going to put something out there too, because I know in the land of spirit, of the soul, of the all that is, there's no judgment. And we are to remember, right, that we're in this polarity plane, at least on this existence, there is that the dual nature.
Yes.
That many times the illness or people, you know, coming in no limbs or whatever is part of that. It's part of the creation.
Yes.
I don't look
at
it as a mistake. I think that is so newbie. It's neophyte metaphysics to think that if someone has an illness or their body is not in a certain form that we have been programmed to think is perfected form, that person has less consciousness or is less evolved or less awareness. That's a trap. That's a trap from the ego mind, what we call the glamour realm, is to ensnare.
And it is absolutely, and it's a reflection of the domination of the mental plane, where it says, if I were only thinking different, then it would be so. That is coming from a not integrated place of seeing that both body, mind, and spirit are all manifestations of one another. And it isn't that the body is a manifestation of the spirit. The spirit is just as much a manifestation of the body as the body is a manifestation of the spirit. The mind is as much of a manifestation of the body as the body is a manifestation of the mind. They're all aspects of the oneness, which is beyond body, mind, and spirit. And so I agree with you. It's very naive, but that's okay, because again, these are stages of learning. You know, we're in a very adolescent stage in our consciousness, and if we could just understand that, we could have maybe, you know, pity for ourselves.
One thing I want to put, because I'm looking at the chat room in this, and I know you can go into this also, Beth. You know, my perception is, if you can think it, that's a stage or a level. What we are and how we manifest is so beyond our thought. Once you get a thought, because that's a system, once you get a system going, belief system and an understanding, you soon enough will be at another one that's more expanded to explain that next level in consciousness. So someone is saying that we choose lessons. I'll put my two cents in, and Beth, I'm really interested in hearing what you think of this also. My understanding and experience is not necessarily, yes, do we learn? Yes, and we, on an ego personality, we have, perhaps we could say, learning lessons. But who, when we're in collected form, non-individuated out form, we're not sitting somewhere cooking up everything we're going to experience here to learn, right? So it's not a lesson. My perception is all this was wonderfully created by a lot of ego personalities as ways to control our existence and our experience and to make sense of it.
Yeah.
So and that's why I love, Beth, what was it? I got to go back to it. The path of not knowing, is because every time you get to a new level, it's going to be the great ha-ha on the ego personality. Once you think that you're doing certain things and certain things are happening in your life because they're learning lessons, when you go to the next level, you realize that there is no lesson to learn. There just is.
Just
isness. Can you speak to this, Beth?
Yes, I'd love to. The way that I see it, because I'm very down to earth and pragmatic, and all of our work is that it's, you know, it goes back to the simple concept of turning shit into fertilizer. So I see it as, here's how I see karma. Because like you, I don't see us as these individual people. I don't even, again, I don't know if we reincarnate or not. But there is karma, which is, the definition I received is, the energy that attracts to you what you need to learn to move into the next step of evolution. Now, let's say that we as a collective need to learn that we are not individuals, that are separate individuals that can thrive alone. Let's say that is the collective learning, which we'll call it learning.
Okay, that'll keep it simple.
We'll call it learning to keep it simple, but it isn't really. But okay, that's the next energetic constellation of energy that needs to be broken open. Okay?
And I love it. Let's slow that down. That's the next constellation. I love that, Beth. Say it again. Next constellation
next
of energy. Yeah.
That needs to be broken open.
Cool.
So, because what we do is, you know, I'm a counselor, and what I find with people is they come to me, they want me to solve their problem, take their pain away. But what I do is I kind of run through their system and I find the block. Let's say, and all the block is a constellation of energy that has gotten caught in a loop, and that has to be broken open so that the chi can flow, the energy of the universe can flow through it. And so we do that as the person is capable psychically of going deeper and deeper into themselves. We get into deeper and deeper levels, and we get more, and we keep bumping into these constellations of energy. So if we think of ourselves as the microcosm of the macrocosm, then it's in fact we as a collective consciousness are finding, are coming to these constellations of energies that need to be broken open. And that's our experience, and everything that happens to us will keep showing us, hey, you're in trouble here, you're in trouble here, you're in trouble here. Now, most of the time, generally speaking, people ignore the I'm in trouble until they have cancer, they're dead, their child has committed suicide, whatever it is, whatever play, or that we have an economic meltdown. You know, all of this stuff, which was perfectly obvious years ago where we were going. Okay, because we keep ignoring and ignoring and ignoring. And then we have these great crises where we stop and we say, duh, because we don't have very high level of consciousness. It takes all of this to say, duh, maybe something is wrong.
right. There's a glitch.
There's a glimpse into the glitch, because up to that point,
I love that.
We don't even want to know that there's a glitch there, even though we're suffering. And that has to do with the way we've been programmed, and we haven't gotten into that, but that's a long story about the way we're programmed, so that it's all understandable that this happens. But when that occurs...
Let me intervene for 1 second. Can you hold that thought for a minute? Can you go over a bit, Beth?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good. Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to extend the show. Everybody will be
okay,
happy
so
about
what
that.
Time?
Just for a half hour.
Okay, that'll be perfect.
Okay, great, because then we can get into reading. But maybe even on this, and then you said the programming, touch on that,
yes,
and then maybe
the
some readings. Okay,
yes, the
great.
Programming, that would be good. So what happens as a collective is we reach this. Now, but because of our programs, we are so bound and determined not to change, and I would like to get into that if we have an opportunity, that we will hang on until the bitter end, and we see cultures and civilizations that do self-destruct because they do not change. And yet others, when we do change, then and if that doesn't change, that's okay too, because from the perspective of the wonders, who cares, you know, who really even cares if we destroy the planet, the habitability of planet Earth? I'm very attached to planet Earth. I don't think planet Earth is that attached to me. And, you know, if we make it uninhabitable, so what? From the universal perspective, you know, we're it's not a tragedy. To us, it's a tragedy. But in that moment, we have the opportunity for transformation. And so we can call that learning. And this is not on the ego level.
No,
you know,
but I love the transformation, because you're transforming. There's a transition or expansion of the form.
Yes, and what I understand is that everything is a transition to the next transition.
Yes, me too. That's what I'm saying. As soon as you're there, there's more there. There's more.
Absolutely. There is more there to be there, but you can't be to the next there until you've been to this there. You know, you can't be in graduate school unless you've gone to, you know, kindergarten. And, you know, human consciousness is in kindergarten. And, you know, I may be in the first grade because, you know, I'm one of the advanced people, right?
right.
You know, which makes me in the first grade. But I'm really on my way to second grade. I'm really working on that. But because I'm part of the woodness, I can't even get to second grade until everybody else gets to first grade. You know, it's saying, I see that as we evolve, my own consciousness expands, because I am part of the we that is expanding, and I am just playing out some role in this. So now what is the I in this is I may be, for instance, if we were all body parts in the body of God, let's say, you know, I'm the hangnail, I'm there to irritate, that's my job. Okay, so I can see that I have a job in the body of God that can't really be understood. And this goes back to what you were talking about the physical, people being born in different ways, that each one of us is playing out a role in something so much bigger than we can understand. just like each cell of our body, is probably very unaware of the overall dynamic of us. Each cell has meaning only in the context of us. If you take that cell and take it out of the body and put it on the table, like when it dies.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it is vitally important. So I didn't sit there and say, I am going to do this and this and this, and I'm so powerful that I decided that I was going to have this mother, and that I was going to do this, and that I was going to have this experience, and I was going to, because that's still seeing it from the ego perspective. But if you're looking at it from the perspective of the oneness of the whole, then the whole needed to have these experiences. I am playing a role in the whole, and the universe is definitely going to create opportunities because it can't help itself. It's just in the naturalness of its own existence. It is going to be creating the challenges that force every one of us into the next level of evolution because of the whole evolving. Does that make any sense?
Yes. Yes. Well, that's the other part. You know, we are the totality or the whole evolving. That's why there needs to be a certain critical mass or tipping point. It's actually mathematical, to up-level or upgrade the consciousness and the expression of consciousness. And that's, I think, something that a lot of people don't recognize or realize is that the consciousness can be there, but for it to express in manifested form, there has to be a critical mass that's reached.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
true.
Yeah,
I know, Beth. And when I realized that, I was a bit like, oh, crap.
Oh.
I think I've been hanging in the ethers for a long time, huh?
Am I allowed to say the F word on your
program?
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
Oh, fuck, exactly. It's like, because it can hang there, just like what we've been talking about. And you said, you were speaking on this so long ago and had this awareness, but it isn't able to come out into the collective until the collective can handle the vibrational frequency of the information.
Absolutely. And I'm always before my time until I'm behind the eight ball.
Yeah, exactly.
The ego in me gets really bent out of shape pretty easy. So, for example, if I was saying something in 1984, and then 10 years later somebody's getting rich and famous saying the same thing, I always get pissed. I said, I said that, you know, and then I laugh and I said that? Did I really say that? Was there an I to say that? Where did I get that from? Did I get that from the collective? And then I said, okay, shut up, be quiet, go back to bed, you know.
Well, that's the other thing. Who gets to be the one to bring it through? And I say who, the personality, ego. Sometimes, you know, I've had the same where, and sometimes the person does just get it. Maybe you've known something years, even 10 years earlier, 20 years, and been living that. But for your resonance, it's not in your sphere. And somebody else that just says, oh, last year, this is what happened to me, and this, and now they're claiming it. But it's already there. You're right.
Oh.
There is no... It's coming from the collective or divine mind.
Exactly. So for me to claim, even though in many ways I'm, quote, an original thinker, but how original am I? You know, I know that I'm learning it. I'm every time I open my mouth and I'm tuned in, I am speaking from what you call the divine mind. You know, I'm calling the oneness. It's the same thing. It's so silly.
Yes, exactly. Now, Beth, can you speak of, because I've just tapped it in, we're ascending now, but Energy Therapies is asking, is ascension the right of man?
Now, who is Energy? Is this a person?
Oh, it's in the chat. It's in the chat that we have a question that is.
Oh, how lovely. A question from the audience.
Yes.
So but can you tell me, I've never done a blog radio program before. This is exciting. I've done regular radio.
Oh, it's fun. I love this.
Yeah.
I love this. Okay. I've done TV and I've done regular radio, and I love the idea that people can call in, you know, they can, you know, ask questions, but also that it's international, so we have people from all over the world that are commenting and also sharing their own insight and awareness in the chat room. And by
the way,
our chat from Tammy and Reiki Master, our chat was renamed. We do not have a chat room anymore. It's called the Sacred Empowerment Room.
All right. So what was the question?
Something about ascension. If you could speak a little on ascension.
You know,
what's your thought of that? No?
Okay. I'm sure that if you think about it in terms of the collective consciousness in the process of evolution, you could call that ascension, meaning that we are all moving into a higher level of awareness, which, again, we're moving from the first grade to the second, maybe. And that's wonderful. Many people who were attracted to the particular idea of ascension were really looking to escape the integration which we have been meant to address. So it really depends on how the person is seeing it and understanding it. See, there is a bit of truth in everything because everything is part of the oneness. So that the people who think that we create reality, those people were a necessary antidote for people who felt helpless and thought they didn't have anything to do. They were the consummate victims of the planet. So there was tremendous value in that. It's just the lack of integration of the concept. So if I would say that
I'm going to interject just real quick. I do see the caller 313-415. We've got two callers. I'll be getting to you. Sorry about that, Beth. Go on. I'm sorry.
Okay. So that if we think of it as that we are all moving into a higher state of integration and that there will be more and more high states of integration over time because this isn't the end, I would agree with that. And I also believe that people can clearly tap into, in real time, into the higher dimensions. But the value of doing so is to bring the spiritual energy to us in order to live in the present, in the now, so that we don't become fragmented, so that we become more well, more healthy, more integrated on this plane. So I hope that I've addressed the question without knowing specifically what the person had in mind. I hope that I addressed it.
That sounds good. I think that helped. I tend to agree, too. I think one of the things, and again, I think as time goes on and people are being more responsible and doing research. I mean, I don't know about you, Beth, but in the beginning of my training, I studied theology.
Oh.
So I had to go, yeah, but from a metaphysical point of view, and I got my advanced degree in it. But anyway, the thing is, when you take a researcher, if you're doing that seeking and you become the researcher, and this is a lot of the way that I was trained, you begin to see that the further back you go into the Bible, as further as you know whether it's the Roman, Italian, Greek, to the Aramaic as much as you can, or the earliest writings that you can get of anything, whether it's Buddhism, Hinduism, you see this thread. And then when you start looking metaphysically or even at some new thought, metaphysical, even at some esoteric information, you realize that they came through, not as it's bad, but it's still filtering through the religion or religiosity. And as we move more into spirituality or spiritualism, you get more and more pure insight and information that those are still just all beliefs, myths, allegories, analogies.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly. Going back to the path of not knowing, I was told, and I actually have there are 10 or 12 precepts to the path of not knowing, and that was given to me in 1999. And, it basically says we don't know anything. We make everything up. And so since we make everything up, we can get rid of our beliefs. So if you have a belief, realize you made it up. It's a way of trying to make sense of the world. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, throw it out. We don't know anything anyway. So it's very liberating, which means that I can contradict myself from one day to the next, and I don't even raise an eyebrow. And the second thing about that, of course, is that the level of reality we're looking at is just as mathematics changes as you go into different levels of reality. So we have to understand that our understanding has to change as we're looking at different levels of reality. That way, what may be perfect common sense on this level is nonsense on the next one, which has to do, again, with the not knowing. And the third thing, which you're referring to here, is that all the channeling from the source has to come through the form of whoever is receiving it.
Exactly.
And whatever is that person's limitation is going to impact their ability to receive. And that's, I'm sure, why, because I didn't have any training whatsoever either in psychology or spirituality or religion or any of those things. I was trained in history because I was going to be a revolutionary. That helped me because at least I didn't have to break through the crusts of what I had been taught from everybody else. And it brings it down to what turns out to be very universal spiritual belief that if you can look underneath everything, you kind of see them peeking out somewhere and you say, ah, that has a sense of universality about it. And yet when we grow up and we evolve, then we have to be willing to throw that out too, because
exactly.
You can't explain nuclear physics to a seven-year-old. And that by the and that whatever you can tell that seven-year-old is that what they can understand. And one of my clients is a Tibetan Buddhist, and he was very, very funny. He came and he's not Tibetan, but that's his belief system. And he's worked with me for a long time, and he said, oh, my God, Beth, this belief, everything you're saying is totally in sync with Tibetan Buddhism. And I smile and laugh because the guy next door says, oh, this is Ericksonian psychology, and oh, no, this is just like such
right.
and such.
Well, there are those common threads. Right, those universal truths that go beyond the filtering. Now, back in the chat, Beth, I want to tie back in because I had a couple comments after when you spoke about the ascension. So I want to just clarify a couple things from the people in the chat room. So one thing I put in there that basically in my understanding, ascension is going beyond duality. We're not all popping up in the air in our body. So that's kind of common sense. But then when I mentioned about study of theology, someone put in the chat, I believe it was Debbie, that asked in the chat, isn't theology a contradiction to metaphysics? And again, this tickles me. I'm so glad you put this in the chat, because this is why it's do the research. The theology means simply just the study of God. Okay,
right.
And metaphysics is the study of that which is beyond the physical, or it's a misnomer because it's still physical, but it's more the subtle energy, right? So it's perhaps the non-dense.
Yeah.
So when you metaphysically, when you see God as energy, as source of the all that is, when you see God as the life force animating energy, you see God as the matrix that we all are, it's very much in alignment with metaphysics. In fact, God is a metaphysical principle. Right. So anyway, just to clarify that, when I'm saying God, I'm not saying God in the old paradigm of religion.
Right, the old man with the beard.
Yeah, old man with the beard. Or even just our higher self. It's the collective of the all that is. That's why I so agree with Beth when you were saying about that evolution. That I mean, we're the process and we're in the process. You know, we're God, but God is, informing us in a way, or instructing us also. It's that it's such an expanded awareness aspect, consciousness of ourselves that's beyond ourselves, and that's even beyond an aspect.
Yes.
So, yeah, so I love that. Debbie, thank you so much for bringing that up in the chat, because I think my suggestion to everyone, I mean, this is just my little game, because I have a little sleuth energy. In fact, over the weekend I watched, or yesterday I think it was, a Nancy Drew movie, because I love Nancy Drew.
You see, this is meant to be.
With another Nancy Drew, I love it. Yes. And what are we doing? You know, it's like, go, what would Nancy Drew do? She would go get to the bottom of things. So
that's what I like. It's a puzzle. I consider myself the Sherlock Holmes of the psyche.
That's right. Oh, and Sherlock.
sure, like, let me get to our caller that's so patiently been waiting.
Yes, okay. I was just going to ask you about those poor callers.
Okay, hello, 313-415. You're on the air with Awakenings and Beth Green.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, who is this? Who am I speaking with?
This is Marie. Marie,
oh, Marie. Okay,
yes.
Marie, and where are you calling from, Marie?
I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Detroit. Great.
Great.
Did you have a question or comment for Beth?
Were you doing readings?
Yes. What would you, of some sort. Beth, do you want to speak of that a bit?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what she asked.
She asked about a reading. Readings. What are we doing with that? On an intuitive level.
Okay, Michelle, could you explain? I'm sorry, I'm not understanding. What am I reading, or what are we reading
today?
Well,
no. She wanted a reading, an intuitive session.
Oh.
We talked to, yeah.
Oh, I don't do readings for people on the phone. Is that what she's asking for?
Oh, okay, because it was set up to do that. Okay.
Oh, okay.
That's
what I can do is, I mean, what I, here's well, let me explain. What I can do is I can help people to, you know, look at themselves, for instance, in terms of the questions of the conference. But what I have found is I can do like an intuitive counseling. I don't do readings. What I do is I intuit the question, and then I can feel if the people are off or on. And I sound like a counselor, but it's very directive, and it's all coming from the source.
It sounds like a reading to me, a channel guidance. It's just a higher vibration of that.
Right, but it's very, very, very personal, confrontational, and not a very good thing to do in a public environment.
Okay,
I got your information
from Christine. Well, let's just, Marie, what's your question? And let's see what comes through. Let's just instead of getting in the head about it. Let's see what's happening here.
A question as far as...
What did you have a question about your past right now or something going on with you?
Well, I have a lot of dreams. And a lot of times I can't explain them. I have a lot of dreams about being somewhere in a different. It's just I can't really explain exactly where I am, but I know it's somewhere. It's not in the present. It just seems like I'm not in this time frame. I guess that's the best way I can explain it. Yeah, what is that about? Hello?
Yes, you know the first thing that pops into my mind is very few of us actually want to be here now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is the hardest thing is to be here now. And I think it would be very helpful to you to look at the things in your life, because this is very anonymous, right? So I could just say this.
I can feel
pain going down my legs, and I feel a lot of energy going down my legs. And I'm not saying that there is anything physical about your legs, but I'm just sharing with you the experience that I'm having as you're talking, and that there are a number of things that are going on in your life right now that are very painful to you, and that you are not haven't been able to find a way to either accept them, be an allowance, or to extricate yourself from them. And what I feel is a real strong longing to be somewhere else. And you know what I would look at, and this is a kind of a superficial. Because normally I sit down with a person for 2 hours and really get into what's going on.
Of course, they know that too, Beth. They know that.
Okay, thank you for explaining that to me, Michelle. I don't understand that. So, you know, is to look at it and ask yourself, am I really supposed to be doing the things that I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, why? And if not, what's stopping me from getting out of it, from changing? That's what comes to me.
Okay.
Does that make any sense to you, Marie?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it feels very, but you see what I mean? It could get very personal if we went deeper. It feels very painful. And I would suspect, without going too much further, that there are some things that where you're caught and that you really need to extricate yourself to get out of it. And so looking at what is stopping you would be could be very helpful.
Okay. Okay. Mm. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. For calling me.
No problem.
Wonderful. I want to put two things to journal, too. You may be getting different bits of information, but it needs to make sense on a practical level or be guiding you in a practical way. One of the things I'll share, I'll speak of, is that, you know, in this time of awakening, that a lot of people's gifts or insights or understanding is coming through, you know, psychic awareness, if you will, or, you know, we're all intuitive, so that sixth sense could be coming through or just opening to other information. So sometimes really people need to get, you know, mental, emotional help, assistance to clear that, which Beth, you do that kind of work. I'm putting it in the stream.org in the chat room, so that you can have help in seeing what is stuff that I'm just, you know, sifting. And I'll be honest, because you mentioned dreams, and I'm also trained as a dream therapist, Jungian and Sanoa background and style, is that most of the dreams that people dream is a rehashing of the day or weeks or issues that they haven't handled. That's most of the dream. It's a lot of times just coming through symbolically. The next stage is, you know, getting that message from you, if you want to say higher self or soul or you know, however that that direction of what to do or what level is coming in. But that can't even, and then there's predictive, obviously, in visions, but that can't even come in until the emotional body and mental body is clear enough to see what's what. Am I just getting static in the air, or is there an issue I have to handle? You know, is this a rehashed to-do list? Is it the news that I heard last night? Is it the movie I saw last night or two nights ago? Is it the people next door? You know, am I hearing them or seeing them telepathically? So to be able to sort through all that, we really have to be, you know, a clear channel on that.
Yes. You know, if I could just add something to what you're saying, it's so true.
Please.
That to be able to differentiate among all of the different ways that our psyche communicates to us, that our psyche communicates to us through dreams, our psyche communicates to us through feelings, our psyche can communicate us through body sensations. There are many ways, and to be able to differentiate where the message is coming from. Is that message coming from my fear? It's like, oh, I had a dream about something, and it's really all it is the psyche is telling me that it's afraid of something. Doesn't mean that it's a bad thing or that I shouldn't do it. It's just telegraphing to me that I'm afraid. Or it could be telegraphing to me that I have a longing for something. Or it's telegraphing to me that there's some issue from my past. And very often when it has to do with the rehash, like you're talking about my experience, because I work, you know, just, of course, I work with dreams too and the people, is that why did that particular symbol resonate so much with me that it came up in my dream, is that it's a metaphor for something that is going on in my life now or in me that it's calling attention to. So not every dream needs to be looked at or analyzed, but sometimes they're so, to be able to get clear and to get support, and it's so hard when people don't have the right kind of support around them, to get clear about what is the nature of that message, and is there something here that the psyche is telling me needs to be healed, and to heal it, I need to go into it more deeply. Sometimes we can even do a redo by going through a dream where we say, okay, this time I'm not going to leave. I find myself in another place, and you know something? I'm not leaving this time. I'm going to go through. You see that door over there? I'm going to go right back and see what it is that I'm trying to avoid. So we can do that in a conscious state, is even to bring ourselves, work with our own psyches to bring us into using that dream as a self-healing mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that help, Marie?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Great. Great. Well, thank you for taking the time to care about yourself enough to call in and get the support and get some information that you can use. All right, Marie, take good care.
You too.
And you can still listen on the air I'll know that you're there. And any other questions in the chat? That was great, Beth. That was great.
Thank you.
You know, it's another form of getting those messages.
Yes.
Sometimes it does come in the dream form, but sifting through. You have to know how to sift through.
How do you use the information?
Yeah. It does get down to that too, doesn't it? How that individual actually sees or processes the information.
Yes.
So individual.
Yes.
And you mentioned support. What are some good ways to get support?
Well, support is my middle name.
Okay.
Well, not really, but I mean support. So many of us, this is how we see support. We see support as, I'm upset, and I'm going to, oh, that's my dog.
The doggies, what kind of dog?
Two Havanese. Two
dog
eyes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That support to so many people means I'm having a feeling and I'm going to call somebody who's going to agree with me. That is not support. Support comes when we begin to identify those people who have more wisdom than we do, at least in a particular area, or that at least they have more objectivity and that they will tell us the truth. Now, at the stream, we're a nonprofit organization, but we're also a spiritual community of people who have gotten a lot of counseling, of stream counseling. I do a lot of workshops, and people can come and do workshops. You know, you can come and do a weekend workshop even if you come from out of town. I have, you know, a workshop series, Living with Reality. The book, Living with Reality, is on our website free of charge.
Okay.
The Living with Reality program goes into absolute depth how it's like a how-to for consciousness, how to become oneness, how to become differentiated, how to become co-creative, mutually supportive, self-aware, integrated, accountable, not knowing and becoming. That's our last, that's the 9 platform. And the book goes into some depth about how to do it, and it's free. All you have to do is go to our website, go to the Living with Reality page. There's a long section in the beginning about what is the nature of reality and why is it so hard to live with. And then I go on to the platforms. And in the book, there are questions. Every couple of paragraphs, I stop and say, questions you can ask yourself. So there's a kind of a self-help way of supporting. But in addition to that, the stream offers free support groups. I think they're every day of the week now. You can find them also on our website. And you can, what happens is people call into a support group. Let's say it's a Living with Reality support group. They're going to be working on, you know, page 86. People will read a couple of paragraphs and they'll start sharing. And when you start coming to the stream support groups, the degree of the level of self-honesty is so astonishing. And the amount of clarity that people have, not that we're in graduate school, but, you know, we're still, you know, but we're still a step above kindergarten, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you hear so much self-honesty, then it really supports you to become more honest with yourself also, because you don't feel so defensive, because you're seeing everybody else is kind of going through the same thing, because we really... You know, I once described myself as an extraordinary woman who's just like everybody else. And I know that I have very, very high intuitive powers and spiritual powers. I channel tremendous energies and so on. And at the same time, I can be such a jerk. And so that's wonderful, because that's what unites me with everybody else, that I can see, I know what I know because I know myself, because I know what I do.
We're all human.
We're all human. You know,
now, Beth, I'm going to intervene for a sec. We have another question in the chat room about numbers.
Okay.
I can.
Numbers.
Can some messages come to us from numbers if we're seeing numbers over and over, or numbers in our dream?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Numbers, you know, it's, again, to go inside or get support, to find out what that number refers to. Numbers are a fantastic a conduit for information, because if we keep, let's say every time you look at the clock, it's 6:28.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, every time you look at the clock, it's 6:28. Then you have a dream about 16. Wow. Gee, 6 and 2 is 8, and 8 is 16. And you begin to notice that there's some relationship between these numbers. And then if you can have somebody, if you can connect to your own intuition, if somebody can help you, if you have a counselor, or if you call in for our support, or you come to the stream, you will find out what is that number referring to. I'm going to give you an example that's outside the numbers. Let's say somebody came to me as a client for the first time, and they walk in, and they're wearing a certain pair of earrings. And mm-hmm. I feel riveted. My eyes are riveted upon those earrings. Now, I'm not really that much into fashion. I could assure you, this is not my interest. And I can't take my eyes off those earrings. The first thing I'm going to say to the person after I do the opening is, why are you wearing those earrings today? And the person will go inside and will say, wow, but it matches my outfit. And I'll say, that's not it. I mean, this literally happens. I'm giving you an example. And she said, oh, well, my father gave me these earrings. And I said, well, and then I'll get into, well, so why are you wearing the earrings your father gave you? You know, what does your father represent to you? Well, it's support. Well, it's, or it's protection. Oh, really, is it? And, blah, 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 and then we'll get to it, and then it turns out she was molested in the third grade. And we find out all of that by following the breadcrumbs. So when I say everything is information, I mean everything is information. And everything that you put on that day, what you eat that day, what your thoughts are that day, they're information. Now, some of that information, we don't have enough mental capacity or time, and it's not worth it to try to process everything. Well, why did I wear these pants? Well, maybe blah, blah, blah. But some information is really important. So if you keep having the same number come to you over and over, that number has a meaning to you that nobody else probably is even going to know. But in your intuitive sense, you know that, because all the information is stored in your psyche. I'm using the word psyche in a very relaxed way. You know, there may be a specific meaning to it, but I'm not using it in any
technical
sense.
Soul. Yeah,
in your soul.
Soul,
okay.
Psyche, spirit and soul.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So all the information, everything about you, everything that ever happened to you, everything you thought, everything you felt, everything that happened to the people around you that you picked up, which is everything, because we are all incredibly psychic. Maybe not in the sense that you can help other people, but in terms of picking up, because you pick up the energy, and all information comes to us energetically. So let's say your mother was angry when she got pregnant with you. And you're going to pick that up. The minute that you're conceived, you're picking up anger from your mother. That's already beginning to impact your consciousness. So all of this information is stored somewhere. Now, if a number or something like that keeps coming up, then that is a piece of information to tell you that there's a piece of information in your mm-hmm. psyche that needs to be surfaced, because there's something that you are ready to deal with. Maybe it isn't even that you need to deal with it, because you need to deal. Maybe you needed to deal with it 10 years ago, but you weren't ready to deal with it. But you're now, it's telegraphing. So when a client comes in to see me as an intuitive, my job is to hear what their psyche is saying and not listen to their mouth. See, so they're going to be telegraphing the information which their mouth is going to deny, right? Because the mind isn't going to want to go there. But that's what the psyche tells me. And that is the information I follow, and I just keep following it. And one piece of information will lead to the next question, leads to the next question, leads to the next, until you hit the jackpot. And the jackpot is back to that constellation of energy that needs to be released. So by all means, if something is happening to you over and over in any form, there's something very important that you are trying to communicate to yourself.
Mm, I like that. Yeah, it's another form of the message. And since we are vibrational, which the vibration, right, breaks down into a mathematical sequence, if you look at music or sound or toning, it's one of the purer forms or purer ways to get to that message.
Absolutely. There could be sometimes it's an age. You know, and the you know what I'm saying? For instance, let's say 628 or something, and you add those numbers together and it's 16, and your psyche is really telling you that there's something that happened to you when you were 16 that you need to clear because you're facing something right now that is bringing that up, and you're and there's some stuck energy there. And then you go back and you realize, oh, this happened when I was 16, and then you go and look at it again, because one of the most important things in not knowing is realizing that we have a tendency to recreate ourselves and our own self-image every day. And that's bad. Because if we have an idea of who we are that we go to bed with, and we wake up and we still think we're the same person, then we're going to recreate ourselves that way. And then when we tell the story about our childhood, we're only telling the story, and then we're avoiding the energy. And anybody who's really going to help you is going to have to help you to bypass all the opinions that you've created around this story in order to get to the vibrational energy itself, in order to be released from the energy, in order to be free. And the more that we are released from all those energetic experiences that block us from being in the moment, the more we reach that place of freedom, the more we are what I call becoming, which is the never-ending process of evolution, where we can really begin to embrace the experience of life and not fight it, but to keep using the shit, turning it into fertilizer, letting it become the fertilizer for more becoming.
Oh, I love that, Beth. Yeah, and I love that, just keep becoming, and, you know, I put embrace experience and expression, whatever's experience and expressing through us as us, to just embrace that. And I love what you say to get beyond the story. That's my thing. Story's great, fun, interesting, so are thought forms, so are beliefs, but we've got to start getting beyond that, you know, into the energetic principles. We really have to I like what you were saying very much. I so resonate, and I think it's so helpful to others to this, you know, and getting true support, that someone that's not going to buy into the story. Obviously, you want someone empathetic, you know, but you don't want to stay stuck in the story, the old, you know, storyline. And like you said earlier, maybe somebody that's not even necessarily agreeing with you or giving you a different point of view, right?
Yes, absolutely. Somebody who will question. For example, I'll give you an example that is, you know, mind-blowingly contradictory to what we think. Let's say somebody comes in and says, is crying and they're devastated. And they said, well, why are you devastated? And they said, my husband just left me. Okay. What would people normally do? They'll say, oh, poor baby, your husband just left you. How terrible. And maybe the answer is, so why are you crying?
I would say people that have a lot of drama in their life, a lot of stories, start writing those books, those novels, novellas, sell your short stories online, get into screenwriting.
Right, but really question. I believe in questioning everything. Make no assumptions. Okay, you were molested when you were 3. That isn't necessarily the reason that you're blocked sexually. In fact, maybe what the truth is, you were molested when you were 3, you seduced the guy, you felt guilty because you seduced him, you feel shame about your sexuality, and that's why you shut down. So it's until...
Or the judgment of what happened. I had a student in one of my classes, Beth, say it's not so much that what happens to us, it's the conclusions we make.
That's right. Absolutely. It's the interpretation that we gave, but it's also why we did. And this is the most crucial thing in all counseling to me, and in all self-examination, and all evolution of consciousness. Why did I do that? Why did I do that? Why did I do that? So I know you're not supposed to ask. I mean, I was told by therapists, because I've trained a lot of therapists, and I do intuition training and that sort of thing. But, you know, they'll say, you're not supposed to ask why. And I say, why? Because to me, why is the only important question. I was told that it is not what you do that counts, it's why you do it.
Yeah, the intention. Beth, we're winding down. We're on the seconds. It's been great to have you here.
Oh, my God. I didn't
talk
about
that. Do you believe that? We even extended the show.
I want to tell you, when people listen to my music, talk about turning shit into fertilizer. You know, I became disabled when I was 15 and I couldn't play music anymore. And in my 50s, I discovered, you know, electronic music, electronic instruments, and then computers. And I cannot play the piano, but I can play the computer. And I became a composer. And I'll tell you that because I couldn't play anything that was written, it was too hard. It was too hard for me. So,
Beth, gotta have you back. Gotta have you back.
All right.
Yeah, we're not live right now, but we're streaming. Definitely have you back, and definitely we'll talk about doing a conference. Have you do the turning crisis into opportunity? We'll set that up. But it's been great to have you here.
I loved talking to you. This has been the most fun. So could you talk to Christine about the setup and all of that, so that?
I'll email or I'll have my assistant, Linda, email her. But anyways, we are out of time on this dimension, this reality.
Yes.
But even though we're breaking here, we remain all connected. Again, those of you that are just tuning in or listening via iTunes or any of the other podcast stations, Awakenings is every Wednesday and Friday, 12 to 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can also subscribe via RSS feed, or you can subscribe in iTunes and never miss a segment. We've been speaking with Beth Green, who is the spiritual director of The Stream, and that's www.thestream.org. Check out her book, Sacred Union, The Healing of God, God's Little Aphorisms, and the Autobiography of Mary Magdalene, as well as the CD, A Soul's Journey, and the CD, A Gift of Peace. It's been wonderful having you here, Beth. It's been wonderful, all of you in the chat, all of you that you've been listening by phone and that also called in. You are what makes awakenings happen. You make it what is part of this converging flow of the all that is, and I feel very honored to be your co-pilot in this co-creation. And Beth, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I feel so supported. It was an absolute joy.
It's amazing. And we're just going to end with a little bit of The Path of Not Knowing by Beth Green. Take good care and keep quiet. shine your light and away.